Welcome to Tech Talk by LG. My name is Erik Svalberg and I'm product specialist here at LG Electronics Nordic. I'm fascinated by tech and I enjoy learning about how things work. So this is a podcast where we get to do exactly that. It's about all things tech and we break down different topics and technologies so that you can also gain a deeper understanding of your favorite products and all of the gadgetry around you every day. Welcome to this Tech Talk, and today we're going to actually dig into one of my favorite topics. In the past, I have gone through some of the technologies involved in bringing motion pictures to your screen, but we haven't really gotten into the key topic of that screen. So today, let's get into display technologies and all of the tech behind creating the pictures that we watch. Over the last century and a half, there have been multiple ways of bringing pictures to screens, and the first one would be projectors, then moving on to things like CRT screens, plasma displays, LCD displays, and OLED displays. And for a number of reasons, I think we can all agree that display technology and the quality of the pictures we can watch have progressively gotten better. But let's dig into how these pictures were actually made, because there's actually some really cool tech behind creating those pictures. And we're starting off with CRT TVs, or cathode ray tube TVs. And already in the name, you can hear there's some pretty interesting tech involved. So let's go back to when these were first invented. And we can start in 1876 when John Wilhelm Hiddorf discovered cathode rays by observing shadows that were being created in the cathode tubes. And a few years later, a man named Arthur Schuster, I'm probably massacring that name, he discovered that those rays could actually be deflected by electrical fields. And I think it was the same year or maybe the year right after then that William Crookes discovered that magnetic fields could also deflect the cathode rays. These rays were actually rays of electrons, and electrons themselves were discovered in 1891 by an Irish physicist, George Johnston Stoney. And these rays could actually then be controlled and be directed. So what you end up with in a CRT TV is basically a cathode in the back shooting out this beam of electrons, and then you're directing that beam using electromagnetic fields in order to direct it to a certain point in the screen. And that point, that particular point in the picture, is the pixel. And the pixel is the smallest component of any screen, the dot in the picture, which you're using to build this larger image. Now, each single point in the picture has a certain retention time. After this beam of electron hits it, it lights up for a while, and it'll take some time before the image disappears. And so long as this is done fast enough, your eyes will also retain the image and put together the combined light into a single picture. But if you film a CRT TV under a slow motion camera, you'll clearly see the scanning as the ray goes from point to point, from side to side, and line to line. Now, usually you won't even see that it's point by point. It'll look like it's taking a vertical area of the screen at a time. But the fact is that that beam is hitting just one pixel at a time, then moving on to the next. And you might think that that should be visible, that that would be something you would be able to pick up on. But the fact is that it's happening so amazingly fast. For instance, the beam of electrons is actually traveling at 600 kilometers per second. So don't worry, it's not going to be noticeable. You're still going to have the impression of a single full picture across the entire screen. But this is also, of course, the reason why the CRT TV was in Swedish, for instance, lovingly called the fat TV or the thick TV, because you had to give it enough space for the cathode, this little particle cannon in the back, to shoot a beam that could still be deflected to hit the right part of the screen. And in order to deflect it and steer it properly to its destination, you needed enough space for the electromagnetic fields to actually push that ray to the right place. When that ray of electrons finally hits the other end of the tube, it would light up the phosphor layer that was on the other side. Now, these phosphors would be in different colors, in different subpixels, and in groups of three, red, green, blue, they would light up and together form the different colors of the screen. Now, pixel by pixel, the entire picture would be built up like a mosaic, basically, and by lighting up red, green, and blue in different intensities, they would, to your naked eye, be perceived as any other color that you wanted to show. And of course, with time, we developed ways of pushing that little beam at a bit higher angles so that you can make the thick TV a bit less thick, but it would still never get to the point of a flat screen TV until we came to things like plasma or LCD. And while the technologies themselves might be older than that, these two types of television really hit the market in the 90s. And that is 1990s this time. Now, are you familiar with the concept of the three states of matter? Gas, liquid, and solid? Well, both of these TV types are actually built on states of matter that fall outside of these classical three. So let's start off with plasma TV, and plasma is commonly referred to as a fourth state of matter. So by comparison, in a solid state, atoms are not moving around freely, they are held together, and they are in an ordered and repeating pattern, whereas in a liquid, molecules are free to flow around each other, but they're still held together by attractive forces between them, making sure that they stick together as sort of a single mass. Then you have gases, and in gases, the molecules are just flying around each other so far apart that the attractive forces between the molecules don't keep them tethered to each other. Then you have plasma, and this is a state that occurs when the gas gets superheated to the point where it starts to lose its electrons. The atoms don't hold on to their electrons anymore, and they become ionized. And in this state, you have a plasma. And this might sound a bit crazy to us because here on Earth, plasma is mostly found in things like neon signs and other types of luminescent technologies, but plasma is actually the most common state of matter in the universe. Because if you think about another place where you might find a lot of superheated gas, plasma is also present in stars. But on a much smaller scale, plasma is also captured into little cells inside of a plasma TV display where we jolt it with electricity to make it shine. So in every pixel, you would have basically three little cells of phosphors in red, green, and blue, and you could vary the intensity of the electrical current that you put into each one of these in order to vary the intensity of light that you would get out of each one of them. Now, plasma TVs were able to get so thin because instead of sending a beam of electrons from a cathode in the back of the TV, you had electrodes running alongside the panel vertically and horizontally, sending the charge directly into every subpixel. And a big advantage of this was that the pixels were only lit up and only activated if they needed to have some sort of picture content. However, anything that needed to be black was completely dark. So the picture had intense colors, but also very, very dark blacks. And I would almost say they were perfect if it wasn't for a slight reddish shimmer that you could sometimes find on the plasma display when it was showing a dark picture. But this combination of pitch black and vibrant colors was the defining property that made home cinema enthusiasts defend it over LCD TVs when they started growing in popularity. And for a long time, LCD and plasma would battle it out on the TV market. Now, also in the 90s, LCD TVs started appearing, and LCD technology had already been around for a while, and especially simpler LCD displays were already widely used, but you wouldn't really associate them with something that you would see in a television. You see, a more basic version of LCD was what you would find commonly in both some early handheld video games, as well as your basic calculator or digital watch. And typically, this utilized something called reflective LCD. Here, the surface of the display would reflect the light of whatever light source you had outside, and that could be sunlight or just a lamp. And if you guys had an old Game Boy, you might remember this attachment that you could buy, which was basically a lamp that would shine on the screen for you, obviously designed so that kids could play Game Boy after their parents told them to turn the lights off. But that reflective LCD display would also have cells full of liquid crystal material that could be turned opaque at any given moment, basically turn it black, which would in turn outline whatever image it was trying to draw against the monochrome or sometimes painted background. And on a Game Boy, these cells were just regular pixels, but if you look at a digital wristwatch or a calculator, even those used today, you would typically have those cells in the shape of elongated segments that can be combined to build up any number. But the principle is actually the same in a reflective LCD and a transmissive LCD display. The only real difference is where the light comes from, outside of the display or behind it, or what's called a backlight. Because the defining trait of a liquid crystal display or an LCD display is precisely the liquid crystals. And that might actually sound like a bit of a contradiction in itself. Liquid crystals. Aren't crystals a solid? Well, that's where we get into this thing about the crazy states of matter. Okay, so in a liquid crystal display, what you have there is a layer of liquid crystals, which are an intermediate state between liquid and solid, and they are held pressed between two layers of glass. not any glass would do, so you need to make sure that it's really high silica content and it can't be ionized in any way. And in certain cases, it needs to have specific grooves in certain directions to make sure that all of the crystals align. But before we get too carried away, let's just backtrack to what these crystals actually are. So when I say crystals, liquid crystals, we're talking about a type of molecule, typically carbon and hydrogen based, which is mostly rigid but has at least a flexible part. And as I mentioned, this crystalline molecular structure is suspended in a state right between solid and liquid. It has the liquid part because unlike a solid, where all of the molecules would sort of be holding onto each other with their own attractive forces and locked basically in a solid state, liquid crystal molecules are free to move around independent of each other. So they're not bound positionally, but they are, on the other hand, bound to alignment, and different forces will make them align in different ways. That will impact the transparency of the material. So by sending current into the LCD material, you decide how much light you let through. And if you then have a backlight behind this, then you can basically create a picture by blocking out sections of this light. So in an LCD display, every subpixel is basically like a window with shutters, and every subpixel itself has a color. By blocking out light in a single subpixel, you decide how much red, green, or blue light is coming through, and in the same way as the other display technologies, that ends up combining into the colors you see in the picture. So basically imagine that you have a ton of little squares that are all just colored plastic, and you put them over this gigantic white light source. Then you start controlling how much each one of these squares will actually allow through. Now repeat that a few million times at around 60 or 120 times per second, and you got yourself an LCD TV. So what was the thing about LCD versus plasma then? Well, each technology had its own distinct advantages. And while plasma TVs, for example, could get much better contrast because of the fantastic black levels it could reach, it didn't get as bright as the brighter LCD TVs. At the same time, LCD technology was not and still isn't able to block out 100% of the light from that light source that it uses, and the backlight will always shine through a little bit, meaning you don't get the exact same level of black. And you might think that's not a big deal, but at the same time, if you're watching a movie in a dark room, being able to clearly see that gray rectangle where the screen ends could throw you a bit out of the immersion. But at the same time, plasma wasn't perfect either. LCDs could get a lot brighter than the brightest plasma, and plasma, when strained, and if exposed to the same picture for a very long time, always ran the risk of what's called burn-in, where the image would be stuck in the picture and that TV was ruined. And to a lot of consumers, that was just too big of a risk to put up with, and they would still opt for an LCD, even if it might not give them the best cinematic quality. At the same time, LCDs gradually got a lot better, and as they improved, they started to overtake the market, because they were also cheaper to produce and could give you more longevity at a lower price tag. For the real home cinema enthusiasts, that was never an acceptable trade. And some of them would still continue to opt for plasma TVs because they weren't willing to take the trade-off of things like clouding or bleeding, which is different phenomena where the backlight is leaking into the picture. Now, to improve the contrast, LCD displays were developed to have better lighting technology. Things like dimming zones were developed to make sure that the light behind the panel could be controlled more specifically and directed more specifically to where the picture needed it. And naturally, of course, as time went by, LCD TVs also got better at blocking out the light within every single pixel to make sure that they could also get very good contrast and very good black levels. And in the end, the benefits kind of ended up outweighing the cons, and LCD was really dominating the TV market. They weren't only cheaper to manufacture, but they also consumed less power, didn't heat up as much, and over time they also got a lot thinner. And to this day, most TVs sold are actually LCD TVs of some sort. And they will typically either be VA panels or IPS panels. And while a traditional VA panel might carry some advantages in contrast and color, the IPS panel has the advantage that it can be seen at the same quality even if you're sitting at an angle, where a VA panel will typically wash out and start looking pale. And since the LCD market is so widespread, there's also been a lot of development in compensatory or complementary technologies that can help, for instance, boost the color performance or boost contrast of your traditional LCD display. For example, LG's own nanocell technology was one of these options, where a type of particle was developed that would help absorb different frequencies of light that weren't supposed to be in the picture in order to get a better and more accurate color performance. And then there's the famous quantum dot technology, which has been used by a number of manufacturers, LG included, which is a sort of light-emitting particle that, when hit by light, rather than filter the light through it and just turn it into a different color, give it a different tint, it will actually use the energy of the light, which will in a sense activate the light-emitting particle to create new light. And the color of the light will actually depend on the size of the crystalline particle, that is the quantum dot. And with so much development in the LCD camp, you can kind of picture why plasma ended up going out of the market. There just weren't enough people who would pick a plasma over an LCD TV. And that argument you had for plasma, which was that it was still the one giving you the best cinematic experience, well, about 10 years ago, a new TV technology hit the market and it took the TV industry by storm. In 2013, we saw the first consumer OLED TV, and that changed everything. One of the big advantages was the plasma could generate light within every single pixel by activating the gases within those cells. But OLED found a way of doing that even better, and it's kind of all in the name. Organic light-emitting diodes. The beauty of OLED is kind of in the simplicity. Those organic light-emitting diodes are little lamps. Every single pixel is a lamp. Every single pixel has its own light source, rather than trying to filter an external light source. And in that sense, it was similar to plasma, but having a diode rather than superheated gases had the advantage of being able to generate a lot more light at a much lower cost. And by cost, I mean it took less energy and therefore didn't heat up as much, and therefore the technology itself wasn't as susceptible to degradation. And there was one of these diodes in every single pixel. And that immediately eliminated all of the problems that LCD was having with managing that huge light source behind the LCD panel. Inky blacks were no problem, but neither were vibrant colors. And the thing about picture quality is that a lot of it comes down to contrast. Your eyes are always going to adjust to the picture that they're watching. So if you have very bright colors against a grayish light background, they're not going to look as bright as if you can get them against a perfectly black background. So when you're able to create all of these tones within a single image, and not just within the same frame, but actually from one pixel to the next, your eyes are getting a much more complex picture, and it will be perceived as much more lifelike. So OLED TV kept the advantages of plasma TV and overcame some of the hurdles that plasma TV had, but I'd be lying if I said that it didn't take it a while to fully overcome these hurdles. Like, for example, the brightness would still take many years to reach the same levels as LCD, and LCD TVs reached 4K resolution before OLED did. And then, of course, as with almost any new technology, there was a huge difference in the price tag. And I can remember seeing that first 55-inch TV for 135,000 crowns, thinking I was never going to be able to afford one of those. And then there was one final issue. Something that had plagued plasma TVs and been a huge issue was actually still a minor issue for OLED as well, and that was image retention. Now, an OLED TV was of course a lot less susceptible than a plasma TV to any sort of burn-in issue, but being exposed to a static image for an extended period of time could still cause the pigments to degrade and lose color over time. And while technically this could happen to any LCD, CRT, or any other display type, OLEDs in the first few years weren't great at handling static images. So you didn't really have to worry about watching any sort of content or, you know, watching your favorite show, your favorite movie. But on the other hand, you really didn't want to, for instance, forget a teletext page up on the screen or a DVD menu when you went to bed. And since experiences with plasma TV already had people spooked, this was a big worry in the beginning. But as the first few years passed, OLEDs became safer, brighter, and even less expensive. And with their ability to recreate natural, lifelike, and cinematic images, they ended up not only becoming a staple of any self-respecting home theater, but also came into wide use within the film industry, to the point where a lot of big studios now use consumer OLED TVs where they would have used expensive professional monitors in the past. So where does that leave us now? Well, the TV market is still predominantly LCD, and obviously a big part of that is the price tag. LCD technology is still a lot cheaper to manufacture, so you're not going to find OLED TVs in the lower price segments. But at the same time, due to its fantastic performance, more and more companies have over the years adopted OLED into their higher price segments and premium TVs, while companies like LG Electronics have introduced OLED TVs into lower and lower price segments, making it available to a wider range of customers, as well as creating more and more extravagant luxury TVs for the higher price segments. But at the same time, LCD doesn't seem to be willing to go quietly into the night and continues to improve and develop year after year, as does OLED, with new OLED technologies hitting the market year after year as well. So I expect to see these two battle it out for the TV market for another few years to come until the next new display type hits, and we'll just have to see what happens then. But in the meantime, why don't you tune back in another couple of weeks, and I'll have another tech talk ready for you. And if you want to get notified, make sure you follow, subscribe, or whatever is appropriate for the platform you're on. Thank you for listening, and until next time.